and welcome to Ending Physician Overwhelm. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Mello. I'm a family and obesity medicine physician, as well as a certified life coach for physicians. In this podcast, we talk about how the learned habits of people-pleasing, perfectionism, and a lack of boundaries show up in our lives and how they contribute to burnout, exhaustion, and overwhelm. The healthcare system is broken, my friends, but let's not wait for it to be fixed in order to feel better. Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to another special guest episode. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Rebecca Behrens. Dr. Behrens is a family medicine physician with an interest in eating disorders, and she graduated from the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston and did her family medicine residency at Georgetown University/Providence Hospital in Washington, D.C. She currently has her own direct primary care practice in Houston called Vita Family Medicine. And on the side, she is what is called a selfish sewer and likes to sew her own clothes. I just love that phrase. So I have to go there. Dr. Rebecca Behrens, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to talk with you today and just share, you know, kind of your story with my listeners. And I'm going to just have you launch us right in and really talk to us about kind of your first experience with burnout out of residency when you were working in a federally qualified health center, FQHC. What was that like for you?
Yeah, so my first job out of residency, like you said, it was at an FQHC in South Philadelphia, and it was pretty much my dream job, like what I expected myself to be doing coming out of residency. I was working in this health center. I was a full spectrum family medicine physician. I was doing prenatal care. I was seeing newborns. I was seeing families throughout the lifespan. I was doing procedures. It was like everything I ever wanted to do. And I was so excited. Within a year of working there, I got promoted to be an associate site director for my site. And like my dream job in med school was to be the medical director for an FQHC. And so I was on that trajectory, you know. I absolutely loved the job. I loved the people I worked with. I loved the patients. I loved the work, but it was draining. If anyone is familiar with FQHCs, you know, they are usually underfunded, under-resourced, and there's a high need and a high volume of patients that need to be seen. And, to meet that need, it requires usually the people working there to be burned out eventually. We were scheduled for family medicine. We were scheduled every 10 minutes. We had to have 34 patients on our schedule every day. And that was partially because of the no-show rate, because our goal was to see at least 21 patients every day. That was our target. We would have no-shows and then we would have walk-ins, and 21 patients a day is not terrible, but it was not a super organized flow of patients. Mm-hmm. You would have a gap in the morning, and then it would closer to lunchtime just be
10, 10, 10, 10, 10. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just really hard to keep up with it. But I mean, I kept up with it, and I am pretty good in those high pressure situations. I can keep up. I was getting my notes done. I was on top of things, like, but it was taking every ounce of what I had to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And I would come home at the end of the day and just be completely exhausted. My husband was still in residency at the time, so he was also completely exhausted. So it kind of didn't really affect us that much, but it was sort of, you know, I was looking at this and I was like, how can I do this for the long term? Like, how can I do this? And then about a year and a half into me working there, we became pregnant, and, I kept up with the job and everything through my pregnancy. I was tired the first trimester, but thankfully didn't have any major complications. So I was able to kind of keep up with my pace. But at that point I started to really think, like, I can't take care of a baby at home the way that I feel when I get home right now. Like, it's just not going to work. And I was even thinking, like, how am I possibly going to fit pump breaks into this job? Like, how am I going to be able to make sure I leave on time to pick up my kid from daycare? It was just, my day was so carefully structured to make sure I could get everything done that I needed done, that any additional input seemed impossible to overcome. And even like going to my prenatal appointments, it was like pretty hard to make sure I could fit those into my schedule. You know, the, again, like the people I worked with were great. They did what needed to be done, but it was just, you could tell that it was carefully orchestrated machine that could easily break if there's other inputs. So that was my first sort of thought of just like feeling sort of overwhelmed by everything. And like, can I still do this job? And then I sort of started to become a little bit frustrated. Like, why can't I do the work that I so wanted and so trained to do and still be a human? And it's frustrating because you go through all this training and you're so passionate about it and you love the patients and you want to be able to do the right thing for them, but it's, the system is working against you at every step. And it's really disheartening when you come to the realization like, nope, this is actually not possible. anyway, you know, after, I thankfully didn't have to figure out how to make the baby work with this job because, my husband graduated from residency when I think I was about like 30 weeks pregnant or so. And he had found a job actually back in my hometown of Houston. Mm-hmm. So we moved back to Houston before I had my baby. And so once I knew that we would be moving, I started having to look into other opportunities and trying to figure out what else I could do. And I had another very similar opportunity in Houston that I was excited about, but again, I turned it down because I was just, I don't think it's possible. Right. And that was like a really heartbreaking moment for me to realize that everything I ever wanted, like my dream job, I couldn't do.
I'm curious because, you know, kind of everyone's experience is a little bit different. Was there a part of you that was blaming yourself for not being able to do it? Or were you thinking that it was really a systems issue?
I don't know. I've come so far since then. So maybe my mindset is different. Right. But like, I think that job really taught me how bad the system is. Like, you know, in residency, mm-hmm. cause you have mm-hmm. to deal with it, but you don't really know until
right. it's a different scenario when you're,
yeah, it's just, and especially when you're the one making the decisions and like picking up the pieces, you know, when you're a resident, you do a lot of that, but you still have the attending backup and there's still this sense of like a safety net under you. But when it's just you and you're the one fighting with the insurance company and you're the one having to make the tough calls about, like, I mean, I felt myself as the associate site director inflicting burnout on other positions mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I was expected to tell them like, this is your number. You got to hit this number. I hated doing that, but it's a like mathematical reality of the job, you know? And, so you could definitely, I definitely was feeling the pressure that it was a systems issue. And I felt like there wasn't a way that I could do anything differently. So many experiences that I had that taught me that, like, there was one time I had to go to this event that one of the managed Medicaid products put on. And they invited different, you know, people in the community who use their services. And anyway, I went to represent our group and, it was like this, they had hired all these interns, like fresh out of college, to come up with solutions to physician burnout. Like, I was sitting there and I was just horrified at how out of touch with reality they were. Like, they had these ideas like, oh, we can send this person to come and give everyone a neck massage for 30 minutes one day a year, and then you won't be burned out. And I was like, or you could just stop the ridiculous prior authorization process and stop changing your formulary every 3 months so we can never know what's covered, or any of the other things. Like, that's or funny. Pay us appropriately for the service. Like, lots of things you could do. And I mean, it was like, it was comical, but it was horrifying because I was just like, these kids think that they are making a difference and helping, and they have no idea what they're talking about. And the company has invested money in these people instead of investing in actual solutions that would help better serve the patients that they're supposed to be serving. And that like whole event that I went to, that was the moment where I was just like, this is not fixable.
Expletive deleted.
Yes. I almost said it. I was like, I'm not going to swear, but for real, like It was an unbelievable experience. It was so surreal. I was like, this is how out of touch with reality the system is.
And unfortunately, that's not unique. I was told by an HR person to put a pretty picture on my desk to help me feel better. And I was like, oh dear, no, nope, 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 we're not doing that. Oh goodness. Okay. So, you know, of course, I certainly hear, so you were ready for a change and you ended up moving into an academic position. And I'm wondering, and now with your direct primary care, I'm wondering, you know, so many of us think that, you know, we just change the setting and that's going to kind of fix the issue. And I'm wondering sort of what you've learned from going from the FQHC setting into a, you know, an academic setting that was still within a community health clinic, and now to your own direct primary care. Like, what has been the learning for you as you move from setting to setting in terms of burnout and how you think about, you know, caring for patients and caring for yourself?
Yeah. So, I mean, in, you know, in my second job, it was same problems, but different problems. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was not a good fit for me, especially in the stage of life I was in. I had my baby, I think 6 weeks after moving and starting this job. So it was almost equally busy patient-wise. And then there were also like teaching responsibilities and other things that were just, it was a lot of demand that I just didn't have to give at that moment in my life. And I think it kind of finally just came to a head, you know, in my like hazy postpartum overwhelmed state that I was just, I can't do this anymore. And so that's when I started looking into direct primary care and I was like, this is the answer. This is going to fix it. But it's, I mean, what I've learned is there's always going to be problems. And I think having a degree of control over your reality makes a huge difference in how you are able to handle it. Like even in my DPC practice, it's certainly not perfect. I am encountering a lot of my own mental and mindset roadblocks that put me in trouble in, you know, managing the practice, managing the business side of a practice. Like I hate asking people for money, you know, yeah. But you have to ask for money or you can't keep
money has to flow.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, it's different problems. And so it's, you know, I think putting yourself in a position where you do have control. And if you're in a situation where you feel like you don't have control, you always have some control. So reclaiming mm-hmm. some of that control, you know, not allowing yourself to say, you know, I have to do it because they told me to, like, you always have a choice. Yeah. And it may be leaving that job. It may be leaving that specific site, that specific manager, whoever it, like whatever, or whoever the issue is, you can always choose something different. And I think the, you know, switching into DPC and taking back fully control helped me a lot because it allowed me to see that I do always have a choice and I can be my own bad boss sometimes and create my own stressful work environment. And then I can learn like, this isn't going to work. I need to change this. And you can do that in any setting. You can decide what you are able and willing to do, and you can make a change. And, you know, if you're employed, maybe the employer will say no. And then that is how you know that's not the place for you. But there's always a way of reclaiming some control. And I think that makes such a huge difference because even on my worst day in DPC, it's all self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. And so that means that I am able to fix it. Yeah. You know, it's just, it's that autonomy, which I think so many people talk about with burnout is feeling that loss of autonomy, reclaiming some of your autonomy, no matter what setting you're in, is going to make a huge difference.
Yeah. It's funny in coaching circles, they often talk about like, choose your hard, right? Mm-hmm. So you do have a choice when you are, you know, going to work every day, right? You do have a choice to actually, you know, get in the car or whatever that looks like to go. But it's very easy for us to not think of that as a choice. We just think, oh, I have to. Everyone's expecting me to do this. I need the paycheck. We have to recognize that we have choice and agency in those moments. Yeah. Oh, so good. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm curious to know a little bit about the process. So you've had your DPC for a little while now, and it has been a work in progress as you were trying to figure out how the model, how your own practice will line up with your life. And of course, we throw in challenges like children or, you know, caring for other people at home or global pandemic, for example, because those challenges keep happening, right? And so we keep needing to sort of tweak the vision and, you know, tweak how we're doing things. So I'm wondering, like what you can share with listeners about, you know, how having your own practice doesn't magically mean that everything is solved and how you continue to kind of look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I opened my practice in January 2020. So blithely unaware of what was about to happen. So, you know, I was just like networking and going hard and trying to get some momentum. I had a few patients signed up. I was ready to go. And then it was like March and the world collapsed. So I had a very early introduction to, it's not going to work out the way you think it is. And I was obviously completely unprepared for that. And when I, you know, when I made out, it took me a year to plan this out. I had a whole spreadsheet. I had all my costs. I had my part-time job set up to like help me offset costs while I was working. I was like, this is going to work out great. And all of that completely fell apart because I lost the part-time job, was no longer needed during the pandemic. So I didn't have any hours. I didn't have any income. I didn't have any childcare for 3 months. Like it just, I was also pregnant. I found out I was pregnant again, the same week my son's daycare shut down with their first COVID case in March. And so it was a moment of feeling like, what am I going to do? But it was kind of a moment of like forcing me to be able to pivot and to be able to figure out another way. And I'm sort of in a way glad that that happened early on, because if I'd been a little further on and had everything like perfect and then it fell apart, I think I would have struggled more with it. But it was sort of just like, this is another wrench to throw in the mix while you're trying to do this thing from scratch. So I think I just learned that things will come up and you have to pivot. And so I learned how to pivot and I figured out ways of doing it. I worked during my son's nap. I worked during my like postpartum or first trimester nausea and fatigue, and I just figured it out. And so now when there's new challenges, I'm like, well, I'll figure it out. And, you know, I ended up, I had my baby. I still was able to grow. I think I had like 55 patients by the time my daughter was born. I was able to figure out maternity leave coverage. I was able to find a village of people in the area to help me with that, other DPC doctors. I just kind of at every step have just figured out another way, and it doesn't go the way I thought it would usually, but it's doable. I was able to find another part-time job to help me with financially. And I think that's the biggest thing that I always hear from people. I was like, I can't do that because I have loans. Like, I had loans too. We actually refinanced my loans when we got the new job in Houston, because we were like, oh, now we have two attending salaries, so let's just like pay these off. So we refinanced, and it was like a 5-year repayment, and the payment was the same as our mortgage. And I was like, it's okay, we can do it. And then I quit my job. I was very lucky in that my husband is also a physician who did have an attending salary. And so, you know, I'm not going to say that I just magically was able to do this all on my own, but the point being that you can figure out another way. I forget who the author is that says like everything is figure outable.
It's Maria Forleo.
Yes, that sounds right. Everything is figure outable, and you just figure it out. And especially when you're a physician, like, you know, the part-time job that I did find to help me, it was not my ideal dream job, but it actually ended up being better than I expected, and it paid the bills, and we figured it out. And, you know, it's, you can figure it out. You have to give yourself the opportunity though, because you won't be able to figure it out if you're telling yourself I can't. And you kind of have to be in the position of this needs to happen in order for the creative ideas to come. Because if you're sitting there like I was with no money coming in and a lease and things to pay for and student loans to pay. And you're like, well, money needs to come from somewhere. So I have to figure it out. And that's when I think you're able to tap into some of the creative strength that you don't know that you have until you're forced.
Well, I think I hear you saying too, that like, you have to let go of that resistance to the reality and just, and you were pushed in this scenario because it's like, well, no, I've got these, you know, financial obligations and I need money coming into my pocket in order to meet those financial obligations. So I have to figure this out. But even if you're not in that dire circumstance, we have to let go of resisting how things actually are, right? And say, okay, well, I wish this pandemic hadn't happened, or, you know, that maybe I became pregnant later, but this is the scenario that we're in. Wish the daycare was open, but I gotta figure it out, and everything can be figured out.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh,
so helpful. So helpful. So for anyone out there who's listening right now and they're feeling burned out, or they're questioning, you know, kind of whether they're feeling burned out and kind of what those feelings are like, what do you want for them to know right now?
So I think the most important thing is recognizing what you're feeling and that it's fixable, but that you need help. Like, I mean, I'm very open about, I've been in therapy since med school. I will always be in therapy. I will never not be in therapy. Like, it's just going to always be.
Therapy is great. Therapy for all.
Yes. Like, and you know, especially like in people who are in some of like the deepest burnout holes, like often you do need mental health care and support. And that is extremely important. And again, like, even when the money wasn't coming in and we, like, I was still in therapy, like, you, because
this is,
I know,
still an important priority.
Yes. It's so important, because if you can't, if you don't have that support, you won't be able to make the next steps, and you're putting yourself in the house. You have to prioritize that. And you know, mental health, physical health, like, that's the bare bones minimum that you must have. And so definitely reaching out for help and getting the help that you need. And then when you are starting from a place of somewhat mental stability, I never would say that I'm like 100% mentally stable, but you know, as mentally stable as you can be. And you're starting from that place where you have your physical and mental health somewhat under control. It makes you able to then take the next steps of taking back some of your autonomy and making decisions that you're able to control.
Yeah. I think that's really key. And of course, that help looks a lot of different ways. As you said, you know, it can be therapy, you know, of course it can be medical care, you know, and then just speaking to, you know, kind of our connection, you know, I think we both come from a place of, okay, we're taking good care of our mental and our physical health, and we're still also getting additional help and support in our business group, you know, trying to figure out our steps forward and solutions. And that doesn't necessarily come from a place of, you know, disease or burnout or lack, but just a desire to do something more, to do something differently, and wanting that support. And that's okay too.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is said by a lot of different people, but like, when you invest in yourself, the return is always going to be high. Because, you know, I struggle with this sometimes when I'm, you know, paying for the business coaching or paying for therapy even. And I'm like, oh, but our finances. And like, sometimes it really does stress me out, but I know that if I were not doing that, it would have downstream effects on everyone in my family. I wouldn't show up as well for my kids or my husband or my patients. And so I know that it's important that I invest back into myself so that I can better serve the people around me. And I think when you take that as a priority of taking care of yourself in that way, you have to recognize the effect that has on everyone else. And you need to make sure that you're giving that to other people. So you look at it as you're serving other people with it, not just serving yourself.
I love that. Thank you for saying that. So for anyone who's out there listening, where can they learn more about you and your direct primary care clinic?
Yeah. So my practice is in the Heights area of Houston. My website is vitafamilydpc.com. And I'm on Instagram and TikTok at Rebecca Behrens, MD. And I'm on Facebook too at Vita Family Medicine, but I'll be honest, I don't really post on there very much. So fair pretty enough. Much just fair Instagram enough. And TikTok.
All right. So we will link to the more used places where you show up, where people can learn more about the work that you're doing. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And that's all we have for you today, listeners. So thank you for joining us. And until next time, bye-bye.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you as always for listening. To learn more about my coaching programs, head to www.healthierforgood.com. And if you love this podcast, please drop us a review on iTunes or support the show by clicking the link in the show notes. Until next time, take care.